Hey everyone, it's Jeanette
and Kim,
producers here at The Bitchery of History. As we close out season three, we want to hear from you, our listeners, and give you something in return. So, from now until the end of May, everyone who leaves us a review will be qualified for a giveaway.
What? Amazing. So you might have seen on our Insta or on the website store that we have brand new Bitches Get Stuff Done stickers, which are amazing. So if you send us a screenshot of your review, we'll send you a sticker in return for free.
For free.
What?
You can DM us your screenshot on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, or you can email us directly at umpboh@gmail.com.
And this giveaway only lasts until May 31st, so hurry and tell us your thoughts.
Yeah, be our friend, get a sticker, and remember,
bitches get stuff done.
Hi, friends.
Hello.
Welcome to the Bitchery of History. My name's Allison.
And I'm Max.
This week, I'm going to be talking about my bago.
I'm so excited.
Oh, my God.
You've told me to gird my loins.
Oh, my God. It's so good. Okay.
And I will be talking about Grace Hopper. And let me tell you, what a badass.
I am ready.
What a badass. So she's born Grace Brewster Murray in New York City on December 9th, 1906, and she was the oldest of three children. Parents Walter Fletcher Murray and Mary Campbell Van Horn were of Scottish and Dutch descent. Her great-great-grandfather, it is important to note, Alexander Wilson Russell, had been a rear admiral in the U.S. Navy.
Ooh.
And had fought in the Battle of Mobile Bay during the Civil War. Now, Grace was a very curious child, which started at a very young age, and this is evidenced by the fact that at the age of 7, she decided that she wanted to know how an alarm clock worked, and so she got, I guess, all of the alarm clocks in her house, because she ended up taking apart 7 different alarm clocks.
Oh, Lord.
And her mom was like, oh my God, here's one.
Yeah.
And leave the rest of them alone. So
please
she gave
stop.
Her one. Now, for her prep school,
yeah,
she went to Hartred School in Plainfield, New Jersey, and was originally rejected for early admission to Vassar College, are you ready for this? At the age of 16 years old.
What?
16 years old. And she only didn't get in because apparently her Latin scores were too low.
Blah, who needs Latin? It's a dead language.
So she reapplied the next year and got in.
Perfect.
She graduated Phi Beta Kappa from Vassar. And of course, if you don't know, Phi Beta Kappa is basically like the highest honorary society for high achieving academically
nice.
Students. You have to be invited into it. You don't get to petition for entrance.
Darn it.
So
no one invited me.
No one invited me either. So she graduates 1928 at the age of 22 with a degree in math and physics.
Two degrees
in
man.
Math and physics.
Oh, man.
Afterwards, she proceeds to Yale University, where in 1930, she gets a master's degree in mathematics. That same year, she marries Vincent Foster Hopper.
Okay.
Which makes her Grace Hopper.
Gotcha.
A name she actually kept even after they divorced in 1945. 15 years later.
It's a great name, though.
It's a great
Grace
name.
Hopper.
Grace Hopper. Kind of
rolls
off.
Sounds like a Bond lady. And by a Bond lady, I mean like that beats James Bond.
Absolutely.
And is the winner.
Absolutely. Or is the one who makes the gadgets.
Yes.
For the spies.
Yes.
What have you got for me this time, Hopper?
So good.
Oh my God.
I will watch that show.
What I have is a computer.
Tell me more.
Now, 1931, she actually goes to teach at Vassar while still studying at Yale.
Oh, Lord.
Where she earned her PhD in mathematics in 1934, which made her 28 years old when she has her PhD. A PhD in mathematics from Vassar, a master's in mathematics from Yale, and 2 undergraduate degrees by the time she's 28 years old.
Look, I just need to take a nap.
I know. I'm about to, pause the podcast. So in 1940, she originally tries to join the Navy. She's rejected for being too old. The age is 34.
Lame.
Exactly. So she joins the Navy Reserves instead.
Ha!
She's commissioned as a lieutenant in June of 1944. And given her mathematical background, she's assigned to the Bureau of Ordnance Computation Project, which was housed at Harvard University, which is where she learned to program something that was known as the Mark I computer, which is essentially like the first supercomputer.
Yeah.
The first computer. It wasn't even coded like we think of it today. This thing literally took paper that they had to load into the machine.
Right.
And it read the paper by punches that they actually punched into the paper. And then the machine would see the punch in the one place, and then that would make the computation go. When she starts, this computer could do 3 whole computations every second.
Wow.
Whoa. So she becomes the 3rd person ever to program the Mark I computer.
Amazing.
Now, it's actually during this time where we get a fun quirk of computer programming that's actually stayed with us to this day. And while she's working on the Mark II, she's in Virginia at this time. And her associates, some of her coworkers, realized that there was a moth stuck inside of the computer, inside of one of the relays, which was stopping the computer from working. And while neither of them mentioned the phrase debugging in any of their notes or anything, the phrase kind of stuck around, known as a bug in the computer being a problem with the computer.
A literal bug. I've heard that story before, but I never heard that it was like a lady was involved.
It's like, it's so well known that that moth is said to be contained in the notes of that time at the Smithsonian Institution. They still have the actual moth, which just is a stat. It kind of like breaks my brain a little bit.
That's crazy.
A colloquialism that came from one moth getting stuck in a computer. Now, Hopper gets this idea that computers should be more accessible than they currently were. Because, again, in order to operate a computer, you had to know how to punch the things, and you need to know complex mathematics and computational functions and all these different things. And she said, what if we had a language for computers? She's originally knocked down because people literally said, well, computers don't speak English. And she's like, no. We want to create a computer.
Let me explain.
Take a step back. I don't want to teach the computer English.
Oh, man.
Now, in 1949, she joins this corporation called the Eckhart Motchley Computer Corporation, which is essentially the first corporation that was invented to capitalize on this army/military invention called the computer.
Right.
And they were the first ones to go, oh, we could probably make money off this selling it commercially. And so she joins them. Here, she's working on a supercomputer called UNIVAC 1, which was the first large-scale electronic digital computer.
Ooh.
So now they create these what are known as compilers or relays, which is essentially like, instead of having to type out the entire code every single time you wanted to create a function, instead they would load the functions onto essentially what was magnetic tape, like a cassette tape of sorts. And instead you'd punch in a code that would reference that relay, and then the computer would say, oh, I recognize that code. I'm going to pull up this much longer code and run that relay using this, these numbers. So it was almost like using the Pythagorean theorem, where you have like
a quote, right?
You have one thing that works for everything. A bunch of different things.
Yeah,
exactly.
For a bunch of stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. And so this was really what was known as the first computer language, the first computer compiler.
Cool.
Now it takes several years, of course, because this is a new a new thing. It's not like she created this language and all of a sudden there were, you know, home programmers or home hackers or whatever.
Right.
And eventually there's a couple different iterations of it. We get the AO compiler, the BO compiler, which is eventually known as Flowmatic, UNIVAC 1, UNIVAC 2, which are both these major supercomputers. And actually, they were able to make these UNIVAC computers understand 20 statements in English. Now, at this point, she's working on all these computer things, doing all this amazing work. 1966 rolls around. She turns 60 years old. And the Navy, which has a mandatory retirement limit, says, peace out. Thanks so much for your work. And she retires from the Naval Reserve with the rank of commander. 6 months later, in August of 1967, she's recalled to active duty for 6 months, which was then turned into an indefinite assignment. She again retires 1971. This is 4 years later. But then the next year they said, no. We kind of want you to come back. So she returns to active duty in 1972. And then the next year she's promoted to captain 1973.
Oh my gosh.
Now, she retires again. 60 Minutes does this piece on her, which you can find on YouTube. I watched the whole thing in preparation, part of preparation for this.
Yeah.
And this representative, this Republican representative in Congress, his name is Philip Crane, sees her in this segment in 1983, champions this joint resolution 341, which appoints her by presidential appointment back into the service.
Yeah.
She remains on active duty several years beyond the mandatory retirement age. And November 8th, in 1985, she eventually achieves the rank of Rear Admiral, which makes her not only one of the few female admirals in the Navy, but it also means she gets to join her great-grandfather.
That's so cool. Yeah. Oh, I love it when it comes full circle.
Yeah. The biggest achievement that Grace Hopper is known for out of all of this time is taking the original idea of creating these compilers and these different relays and actually turning it into a language known as COBOL, which is still used to this day. And in fact, at the time when COBOL was created, she helped to standardize it for most of the Navy. Learning this language. So it allowed, in a way, modernized the way that the Navy and the Army use this language. And in fact, to this day, a lot of financial computing, for example, ATMs, still operate using COBOL.
Oh, that's so cool.
Language. Yeah, so it still exists to this day. And what it also did was just the fact of inventing COBOL.
Right.
You know, we were talking about last week, you know, if you can't see something, then you create it yourself. You enfranchise yourself.
Right.
By creating this language, it opened the door to other computer languages like SSL, HTML, and all of these other things that underpin the rest of the computer world.
The rest of life at this point.
Yeah. So, you know, I think about Hopper in a lot of the ways that we think about Ada Lovelace. These two women, the first computer is literally created by a woman.
Yeah.
And then the language that created the computers that we know today
was
also created by a woman.
So true.
So it's just, it absolutely blew my mind. Now, at the time of her retirement, she was the oldest active duty commissioned officer in the United States. She was 79 years, 8 months, and 5 days old.
Holy mackerel.
And she actually had her retirement ceremony aboard the oldest commissioned ship in the United States Navy at 188 years, 9 months, and 23 days.
That's amazing.
Yeah. She's not the oldest person in the history of the Navy to have served. There are a couple of men who achieved higher ranks. And at that retirement party, she was awarded the Defense Distinguished Service Medal, which is the highest non-combat decoration which is awarded by the Department of Defense. So she does all this amazing computer work. Over the course of her life, she receives many awards and commendations for her accomplishments. She's awarded the first ever Computer Science Man of the Year Award in 1969.
L-O-L.
L-O-L. The first one literally ever given, and they still called it the Man of the Year Award.
They still call it the Man of the Year Award. Oh, my God.
That's from the Data Processing Management Association. And
that's
then,
probably why.
In 1971, the Sperry Corporation initiated an annual award in her name to honor young computer professionals for their significant contributions to computer science. And then in 1973, she became the first person from the United States and the first woman of any nationality to be made a Distinguished Fellow of the British Computer Society.
Ooh.
Grace Hopper passed away in her sleep January 1st, 1992, at 85 years old.
Wow.
She was buried at Arlington National Cemetery with full military honors.
Of course.
And just one last honor for her. On November 22nd, 2016, she was posthumously awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Barack Obama.
That's awesome. But I also feel like Barack Obama was kind of handing out those things like they were candy.
Oh my God. Yes, he did.
Which is great. Like, I'm all about it. But I feel like we've covered a couple people that it's like, and then Barack Obama gave them the Medal of Freedom.
Well, what's kind of amazing about Barack Obama's term in office is that a lot of the awards that he gave were posthumous awards recognizing people, and especially
who'd
people of color
forgotten.
Or people
women.
Of or women.
People of
female
body.
Female body. Female descent. We're all people of female descent.
Right, exactly. Grace is so cool.
Absolutely.
Okay, Get yourself ready for my bago.
Strapped in.
Okay, so not much is known about her early life, but she's likely born in the late 1600s-ish.
Okay.
It's in the ancestral village of Jabal near Pati, and it's in the present-day Tarn Taran district of the Maha region of Punjab. So while growing up, her father taught her how to ride a horse, how to fight, and how to be a good Sikh. So quick note on Sikhs or Sikhism. The religion is often confused with Islam because Sikh men wear turbans and people
and grow their
are
beards.
Not culturally,
educated.
People are not culturally aware. So it's not. Sikhism is a monotheistic religion. It originated in the 15th century and it's based on the revelation of Guru Nanak. And the term Sikh has its origin in the Sanskrit words meaning disciple or student.
Okay.
So Sikhs believe in five ideals: honesty, equality, fidelity, meditating on Wahguru, and never bowing to tyranny.
Amen.
So I'm all about it.
Equality, never bowing to tyranny.
So get ready. So she's taught how to fight, how to ride a horse, never to bow to tyranny, and equality.
My mouth is on the floor.
So while I was growing up in modern day India, the Sikhs were being massively persecuted by the Mughal Empire. Mm-hmm. And they were bad people. Mm-hmm. Originally, they'd been kind of okay. Their founder, Babar, had sort of quite the lineage. He was a descendant of Tamerlane on his father's side and grandson of Genghis Khan on his mother's. So,
wow.
Kind of like, oh, an important dude.
Yeah.
And so the Mughals carried on or sort of refined this legacy. So on the one hand, they were very militaristic. They rode elephants into battle. They sort of redefined warfare. And then they expanded the empire until it encompassed all of present-day India and then some significant regions beyond. But they also advanced literature, culture, the arts. They built the Taj Mahal and giant libraries. And they had a very sort of multicultural, inclusive empire.
Wow. So they were doing something right.
Yeah. So, you know, Akbar the Great brought together a huge number of peoples, including the Sikhs, and had this, like, very peaceful literary sort of secular empire. But of course, by the time Mai comes along, not so nice anymore.
That's
the Mughals
degraded.
They pretty much just want to kill all the Sikhs and their guru. So Gobind Singh Ji, who Mai's parents had taken her to see when she was younger, is is the current guru, and he decides that he wants to found this group called the Khalasa, the Warrior Saints.
Probably, Khalasa, like Khaleesi?
Ooh, maybe. Could be. I like where this is going. So probably he got this idea because the previous guru had been killed when he was 9 years old.
Oh, Jesus.
So this guy's like, we need some warriors.
Yeah.
Quick time.
We need some help.
So, of course, Mai is like, heck yes, I want to be a warrior. Sign me up. I can ride. I can fight. I believe in equality and down with tyranny.
Down.
I am on board.
Of course, she was the first one in line, probably.
Probably. So she goes and joins, and they fight for years, these warrior saints. They hole up in fortress after fortress. Sometimes they're subsisting on nothing but nuts and leaves. And then the Mughals and the hill chiefs surround this one city, and they're demanding that it be evacuated. Anandpur. So a group of about 40 Sikhs asked the guru, hey, can you give us permission to fight back because they're surrounding us? And then the guru said, well, not yet.
Okay.
Now's not the time.
Uh-huh.
The guru tells them not to fight. They still demand that they want to fight back against the Mughals that are surrounding them. And they don't want to wait any longer or they will not consider themselves Sikhs of the guru.
Jesus.
And the guru told them, well, stay put as the time is not right for a fight. So all 40 Sikhs deserted. They're like, we don't get our way.
That's
bye.
So dumb. They took their ball and they went home.
So all 40 Sikhs, except one, and like, guess who? It doesn't say, but like, come on. Wrote their names on a document which mentioned that they are leaving since Guru did not let them fight with Mughals and therefore they
don't
need to fight for him.
Petty.
So Mai was very distressed to hear that some of the Sikhs of her neighborhood who had gone to Anandpur to fight for the guru had deserted simply because he didn't let them fight. So she criticized them openly. And though she admired their eagerness to fight back against them, she said, you didn't follow the guru's rules. So she rode to every nearby city and convinced all the local women to refuse them hospitality.
Oh my God.
She's like,
oh no.
They did the wrong thing and they left and you cannot give them anything. So the Sikhs were very ashamed
that they did not follow these orders. And Mai eventually kind of meets up with them and gives a speech or just talks to them, criticizing them and sort of explaining her position. And they're like, okay, we're sorry. She persuades him to go meet with the guru and apologize to him. So this happens. They all go back. And just in time, because now as the 41 now, warrior saints are riding back to the guru, the Mughals were making another assault on the strongholds. The size of the army is very difficult to determine from historical records.
Sure, I'm sure.
Some people are claiming that the Mughals had 10,000 men, which seems kind of high. Mm-hmm. But it is agreed the Sikhs were very massively outnumbered. So on December 29th, 1705, the 41 Sikhs rushed in to cut off the attack anyway.
Okay.
And they did several clever things in this battle, which tried to help them out. They positioned themselves in front of the reservoir, the only source of water for miles around, and defended that viciously.
Great.
They laid sheets across bushes everywhere, so it gave the appearance of tents. And then they hid nearby, so when they came and attacked tents, they attacked them. It's a trap.
They attacked bushes instead.
Right. Well, and then while they were attacking the bushes, then the warrior saints jump out of the other bushes, and they're like, ha ha ha.
Amazing.
We're not in those tents. We're over here.
We're
going to
trick them. Make them look bigger than you actually are.
They kicked up a colossal amount of dust, which attracted the attention of the retreating guru, who then proceeded to unleash an incessant barrage of arrows from a nearby hill onto the Mughals.
Wow.
So eventually, battered and thirsty, the Mughals withdrew. However, all 40 of the deserters died in that battle, as did a large number, of course, of the Mughal soldiers. Mai was the only Sikh survivor.
No.
So from there, she became personal bodyguard to the guru.
Oh my god.
I mean, of course.
Talk about a battlefield promotion.
Totally. Like, literally everyone else is dead, and you probably came up with all the plans that had us win this battle in which we were hugely outnumbered. So how about you just make sure I don't die?
You want the job? You got the job.
She actually ended up outliving the guru and just died of old age later.
She died of old age.
Just died of old age.
This is my... My favorite ancient stories end with she died of old age.
Yeah, because it's like they go and they're awesome and then they're like, yeah. I mean, can you imagine having her as your grandma? Like, oh yeah, this one time, like I defeated a huge battle.
Personal bodyguard to guru.
It's amazing.
Wow.
The Mughal Empire began to have sort of a slow decline. It petered out about a century later, but the Sikh religion continues strong to this day, and Mai Bago's spear and gun can still be found in Sikh museums, and her house has been converted into a Sikh place of worship. And lastly, although best known by her name Mai Bago, technically her name after she joined the Khalsa was Mai Bag Kar, which is the surname that all female Khalsa take.
Okay.
Like Singh.
Sure.
Most people that you meet whose last name is Singh are Sikh. That should just be for men.
Mm-hmm.
For women, it's Kar, which means princess.
Oh, I like that. They named all of their warriors
all
princess.
All of them princess. So good.
They were warrior saints. Good. All named princess.
Amazing.
Hello, my name is Princess Warrior Saint. Would you like to fight?
No. I would not. I would like to surrender now. Here are my guns. Here are my swords and my shields.
There's a podcast done by Preet Bharara. It's called Stay Tuned.
Mm-hmm.
It is amazing.
Great.
And this most recent episode that actually came out today or yesterday, which is the day of this recording. Today is May 4th. So yesterday, May 3rd. He's talking to this guy who got what's known as the Magnitsky Act passed, not only in America, but all around the world. And it reminds me a lot of Mai, because the Magnitsky Act is literally this act where Putin stole a whole bunch of money, killed someone in the process who was trying to uncover it in order to keep all of the money.
Of course.
And then this guy that Preet had on his show is like, well, now that guy was my friend and my lawyer. So now I go from country to country, getting those countries to pass laws saying the people who were involved in that money deal cannot go anywhere in the United States and anywhere in the world, cannot use their money anywhere. They're on the Treasury sanctions list, which means they can't open a bank account anywhere in the world. Anywhere.
Whoa.
So like this is like old school. If Mai did this as well, like this is
I love it.
Amazing.
Hey friends, if you are enjoying this episode and you want to have more and more keep coming out and learn more about these incredible women and stories, do me a favor and just go to patreon.com and search Ursula Major. That's where you will find our podcast page. We've got a bunch of different podcasts up there now. Dollar a podcast, dollar a month, any little bit helps us keep creating these episodes and bringing them to you. Plus, you get lots of awesome bonus features, and who doesn't want that?
Hey friends, if you are enjoying season 3 of The Bitchery of History or seasons 1 or 2 and you're looking forward to season 4 coming out, do us a favor and go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podomatic, Google Play Music, wherever you're listening to this podcast and leave us a rating or a review. Those ratings and reviews, they help other people find the podcast, which helps us keep doing this podcast. Thanks.
So today, speaking of women creating computers and not getting recognized for it, I thought that we would talk about women basically creating science fiction.
Oh, yeah.
There is an amazing thread on Tumblr that's been screen capped and sort of shared around. So I'm just going to kind of read through that. It starts out with someone saying, "Just remember, there's no such thing as a fake geek girl. There are only fake geek boys," which maybe let's not go
too much
into
in the
dichotomy.
Other direction.
Let's not get into dichotomy. But it says science fiction was invented by a woman.
It was.
Specifically a teenage girl, you know, someone who would be part of the demographic that some of these boys are violently rejecting. Someone replies, "Isaac Asimov." Someone else replies, "Yo, Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein in 1818 and Isaac Asimov was born in 1920, so you kind of get my point." Someone else chimes in. This is why you should like check all your facts on the internet.
Yes.
Bros.
Check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Totally. Someone else comments, "If you want to push it back even further, Margaret Cavendish, the Duchess of Newcastle, who we should cover, wrote The Blazing World in 1666 about a young woman who discovers a utopian world that can only be accessed via the North Pole. This is often credited as one of the first sci-fi novels." Hmm. Women, of course, as we know, have been at the forefront of literature. The first modern novel, The Tale of Genji, we've talked about that. Even in terms of male science fiction authors, Asimov was predated by Jules Verne, H.G. Wells, George Orwell, or maybe Poe or Jonathan Swift has a case, but Asimov? And then they write out like in vernacular form. So desperate to discredit the idea of Mary Shelley as the mother of modern science fiction, you didn't even do a freaking Google search. For shame. And if you want to go back even further, the first name identified author in history was Enyuda of Akkad, a Sumerian high priestess.
Wow.
Then someone else commented, like, this thread is just amazing. Kind of funny considering this Isaac Asimov quote on the subject. "Mary Shelley was the first to make use of a new finding of science, which she advanced further to a logical extreme, and it is that which makes Frankenstein the first true science fiction story."
He said that himself?
Yeah. So someone comments, "Even Isaac Asimov ain't having none of your shit, not even posthumously." Then apparently, and this I've got to dig more into, that masked vigilantes were also invented by women. The precursor to the modern superhero, Baroness Emma Orsi, wrote The Scarlet Pimpernel in 1905, and the character would later inspire better-known masked vigilantes like Zorro and Batman.
Oh, how interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And we have also covered Octavia Butler on this podcast as well.
Yes.
Who was the first woman to win a prestigious science medal.
Science fiction medal.
Yeah. Right? Literature medal. And we did our first recorded interview, a sit-down interview.
Yes. It was amazing.
At the Huntington Libraries. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can find that on YouTube.
So I think what I would want to say with that is, like we said at the beginning, you don't have to go too much in one direction or the other. It doesn't have to be a dichotomy. Like, this was invented by women and this was invented by men.
Exactly.
But I think it's important to remember that there is likely equality. If you're only seeing stories of, well, these things were all invented by men and most likely all invented by white heterosexual men.
Right.
Do a little bit of digging. There's probably plenty of other examples, maybe contemporary examples to that one or prior of women or of people of color that have also made significant contributions in that area.
Absolutely. I mean, that really just, it's just another illustration of the entire point of this podcast.
Yes.
For example,
totally.
growing up and learning about the American, all of the American wars, mm-hmm. Civil War, Revolutionary War, yeah. World War One, World War Two. You're like, these were, men were soldiers and the women were on nurses and working in the factories. But like, we have found how many women at this point who either dressed up were dressed fully, I'm a woman, acting in times of war.
Yeah. I'm a woman, but I would like to buy a tank and go destroy Germans. Exactly. And they're like, literally. Sure. Literally. If you want to buy one.
I'm a woman.
Do it.
And I rode a horse longer than Paul Revere. Did.
Oh, I know it.
Exactly.
I
the very first it. Woman you did on this podcast.
I know. I mean, she's my favorite. Deborah Sampson, obviously. Praise to all the praises.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
So I agree with you when you say if this is how you think the world is, it's probably not. To be honest, that really should be your worldview in everything.
Right.
If this is how you think the world is, it's probably not.
So I've got a great cause of the week for us. We've already given a shout out to this organization, but in honor of Grace Hopper, who was recalled to the Navy many, many times, yes. We're going to recall Girls Who Code. You can find them at girlswhocode.com. They are an incredible group. Their mission is basically a single mission to close the gender gap in technology. And they are on track to achieve gender parity in computer science by 2027.
That's
and
amazing.
And that is because of this organization and the work that they are doing. So check them out at girlswhocode.com.
Awesome. Well, that is our third to last episode of season 3 of The Bitchery of History. If you'd like to keep in contact with us, you should find us on Facebook. Just search The Bitchery of History. We've got not only a Facebook group, but we've got a discussion group in there as well. I know I post things in there, you post things in there, Allison, Jeanette posts things in there all the time, so you can actually talk to and discuss things with us
and
as well.
And you can probably post things in there too.
You can, absolutely.
So share your findings
absolutely.
With us.
We have people who post articles and pictures and all that kind of stuff in there. You can also find us on Twitter at Bitchery Podcast, on Instagram at The Bitchery of History, and you can find us on our website, that is umpboh.com, where not only can you see all the women we've done over the 3 seasons of The Bitchery of History, mm-hmm. but you can also see us, pictures of us, and you can contact us on our listener submission page. And as we close out the season, we are going to start asking you to submit women you'd like to possibly see for a season 4
mm-hmm.
on that listener submission page. So again, that's umpboh.com.
Friendly reminder, we could not make this show happen without our incredible team. So a special shout out to Kim,
Jeanette,
Jess,
and Sydney.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'll give a shout out to you, Max.
Oh,
season 3.
You. I'll give one to you. Oh. Thanks, Allison. And
as always,
bitches get stuff done.